681 Tatter Mitters versus Camstrup. Boy, these names are messing me up today.
You're doing fine.
Is there no appellate? Is there no appellate? Okay, I don't think I knew. Okay. Okay, Mr. Is it Basil?
Basil.
Basil? Basil, you have an E on the end.
I know, it's Sicilian, Basile. My dad at dental school, they started calling basil, so me and my...
It's my favorite spice.
We're all basil.
So it works out.
Good morning. May it please the court, Rich Basil for Apotor Mitores versus Camstrup. The issue in this appeal is very straightforward. There are two issues. One is the patent owner, appellant, Apotor Mitores believes the board erred in finding that the patent owners failed to produce sufficient evidence to establish its conception of the invention. And then its second error was in also finding that patent owners failed to disclose substantial evidence to establish that the inventor, Drachman, was diligent in reducing the invention to practice. The patent owner believes that based on the testimony and unrebutted evidence that was submitted during the IPR, there is no real other conclusion than that the patent owner sufficiently conceived the invention before the critical date and was diligent in reducing it to practice.
Well, I guess the problem that the board found, the main problem, it seems, was corroboration of the patent owner's claimed conception, especially in light of the fact that what the patent owner produced was emails that didn't even show an attachment or a particular file having been attached, and that all that the board had to rely upon about what was in fact sent in those emails was the patent owner's own declaration. And so it seemed circular. You know, the patent owner is trying to use an email that he printed off his computer to confirm a conception date, but the email itself doesn't actually confirm the conception date. It just says something is attached. It doesn't identify what's attached. And then the patent owner in his declaration tries to tell us what was attached. So it seems very circular. It's kind of hard for me to understand how the board erred in concluding that that didn't amount to corroboration, since the patent owner's declaration was necessary to corroborate what was attached to the email, which was supposedly to corroborate his declaration.
This is a function of the inventor, in this case, the sole inventor.
Yeah, but he sent the email to somebody. He could have just gotten an affidavit from that person he sent the email to saying, yes, you sent it, and yes, that was the document attached to it. I mean, you're saying a sole inventor. I'm sympathetic to sole inventors. They're limited resources. You know, they're limited understanding of the litigation landscape. But, you know, in this case, all he needed was an affidavit from the guy who received it saying, yep, that's what I got.
The declaration was given under oath by the inventor that was his
but
email,
that's
that
not
those
enough.
Were attached.
That's not enough under the corroboration requirement.
Well, it should be enough, especially in an IPR.
But it's never been enough in any case we've ever had. There has to be corroboration of the inventor's claims of conception.
But those documents do corroborate his testimony, if taken as true.
They say something was attached, but they don't identify what was attached. That's the problem.
But he does state that in his records when he pulled that email that those documents were attached.
But that's his own testimony. The problem is the email itself doesn't corroborate that testimony.
Well, but the single email, well, it doesn't corroborate his what we're trying to corroborate is that he conceived of his invention. prior to the critical date. That's what the corroboration is.
Right.
And these are supporting documents.
And he states that in his declaration.
That he did, and that these documents are submitted to corroborate that testimony.
Yeah, but that's where your problem lies, because the documents don't by themselves corroborate his testimony.
Well, that individual document doesn't, but when you look at the documents as a whole and all his corroborating evidence, which is what the rule of reason is for, he had multiple emails, he had drawings, he testified to the dates of when those emails were sent. Those emails being sent established the timeline that showed that he conceived of it before the filing date. And
well,
if there was an issue...
Separate and apart from his declaration, what in those emails identifies what was attached?
Well, the second email, I think, to Berngard talks about what was attached is identified in the ray line, the subject line of the email.
And it says what?
It says... In the email itself, he says it's my latest presentation, and it he includes in the Rayline UFM X++ next generation.
But how do we know?
Actually, it doesn't say UFM +++ next generation. It says UFM +++. Please be precise.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. How do we know that what is referenced in that Rayline is in fact the document that he says in his declaration was attached? We don't know that from the document itself. We don't know that from the email itself. It could be any number of presentations regarding.
But there's no evidence of record there were any other presentations. This is the issue. You know, by discounting it and not taking his testimony at its face value, which the board says it's doing, then you know, any inventor testimony can always be brought up some question or some issue regarding its authenticity. And had that been done in this case, the petitioners could have filed a motion to exclude. They knew about these documents earlier in the case. There was no indication there was any problem with the authenticity of the documents, that they did exist, that he did present them, that he did send those emails, that they were attached. He would have had the opportunity to go back and get further information to authenticate those documents, whether it be from some software specialist or expert who could have tied those two documents together if there was going to be an issue with it.
Or the recipients of the emails.
Or the recipients of the emails. But there was never any doubt raised by the petitioners in this case. And those documents were produced also. They were produced at the very initial response phase of this case. So years went by, and they never brought that issue up until their briefing.
But you have the burden of production on proving conception and corroborating that conception because you're trying to swear behind something. So you have that burden of production. So it's not their burden to disprove your claimed conception and whether or not you corroborate it. It's actually your burden to affirmatively prove it and corroborate it. And I don't know. I mean, corroboration, is that a question of law or fact? Do you know?
I believe corroboration is a question of fact, and it's a rule of reason analysis, and you need to look at all the evidence that's submitted in this particular situation.
Exactly, but I don't get to look at all the evidence submitted. If it's a question of fact, I have to review a board fact-finding for substantial evidence. So I don't get to do some sort of de novo review and say, well, I would have gone a different way. I have to review this for substantial evidence. Did the board have substantial evidence for its determination that this email, standing alone without any evidence of what was in fact attached, corroborates his claim of conception? And I don't see how I can, under my standard of review, unwind that even if I would have disagreed with it in the first instance.
Well, I think if you look at, you know, the issue here is that email that they're attacking, the one that doesn't have, the petitioners argued didn't have an icon that said there was an attachment. They point to that as part of the reason why it shouldn't be believed. And then the board discounts the entire email, the statements in the email itself that talk about an attachment being made, that talk about his new meter, that all coincide with the story of inventorship, which is what this is about.
Well, let's look at the email because I just don't see all the stuff that you say is in the email. At page 836 is I don't know how to say the name of, it's the second email.
Is it the Tonheim?
Page 836 of the appendix.
It's the email to Mr. Berngard.
Yes.
So all it says is, here's the presentation I promised. I'm also sending my resume and two reports I found online about the market. Please call if there's anything you need.
And this is, it talks about a water meter. The subject is a water meter project.
Yes.
It's March 22nd. It's 3 days before the critical date. He files his patent application 23 days later. So obviously, you know, common sense would say he was probably working on his patent application. The only water meter that's in the record is this water meter that ultimately patented. He's filed several patent applications on it. The problem was the board took those, the things that were missing, and used them to completely discount the reference as a whole. And it should have been considering everything that was in the reference. This is very similar to the NFC case where...
But this reference doesn't have anything else in it. Nothing personal, but it doesn't say, I have invented a new water meter and I've attached pictures of it for you to look at. You know, I think it's going to revolutionize the industry. There's nothing in this email other than the subject line, which says water meter project, about what he was sending them. It's even referred to, here is the presentation I promised. That's all it says. So, I mean, I don't understand what you think the board discounted that is present in the email.
I'm discounting that it failed to read it in conjunction with all the other corroborating evidence.
But there is no other corroborating evidence. There's only his declaration.
Well, if you don't believe Mr. Drachman and you assume he's making this all up, then I agree with you. This document doesn't show it.
But I guess
the problem
you can't use his declaration to corroborate his evidence, which is supposed to corroborate his declaration.
Well, who else can corroborate his emails?
The guy who got them. Or he could have had an IT person demonstrate what was attached.
And when would we have known to go get another declaration from the person?
When you understood that it's your responsibility to independently corroborate his claimed conception.
Okay. Your Honor, here's it says 2RB. Do you see the two line, the RB?
Mm-hmm.
Who's that?
I would assume Mr. Drachman knows since he sent the email.
Yeah, and he put the declaration. Now, did the petitioners challenge that? No, they didn't challenge that as missing because they knew that person. And so the point is, I don't know if they were going to have a problem with that. I would know they were going to have a problem with the two line either. They could have disputed that it never went to them, which they're doing as well. They could pick anything in these emails to say it's inadequate because it doesn't disclose.
I guess here's my problem. You have the burden of production on this point. Just like today, the guy didn't show up. Do you think that means you automatically won? He decided to waive argument. Does that mean you automatically win the case?
No, Your Honor. We have
of course not. You have the burden. So even if they don't show up and object to your evidence and therefore cause you to put on more evidence, you've got the burden of convincing the board that this corroborates your guy's testimony. The other person doesn't show up, you could still lose.
Understood, Your Honor. But this wasn't the only corroborating evidence that was submitted. Also was submitted was his emails and his attachments and other materials that were with this email.
Do you want to say, well, there's no time to say for rebuttal. Please continue.
Well, again, I think it's very much in line with the NFC case where the board did not analyze the elements of the corroborating testimony that support the inventor's testimony. They fail, and in our brief we talk about it a little bit, but the fact that these emails tell the story of his inventorship, these are all happening just weeks before his invention date. It's the only water meter. The record is absent of any other water meters or designs or projects that Mr. Drachman was working on. They never took Mr. Drachman's deposition. They never questioned him on any of this. I understand that they're then relying on the fact that they don't think we met our burden. But we believe we did meet our burden. And if we take all his
testimony... Did you submit any other evidence that this is the only project he's working on? This is the only invention? This is the only disclosure material for the UFM++ project?
Well, he had attached to this email was his PowerPoint presentation, which talks about his next generation flow meter. And then in that reference, it talks about his one device and how it's patentable subject matter is four new patentable electronic inventions in addition to a completely new mechanical design. That's at Appendix 814. His PowerPoint has the drawing of the water meter device, one of his drawings that predates his invention on Appendix 815. And
I mean, the point I'm getting at is that you're contending that there was only one UFM++ presentation.
That's the
only
evidence.
And therefore, when the email says, here's the water project UFM++ presentation, that had to be it. So I'm asking you, what evidence do you have that that was the only presentation?
That's the only evidence that's in the record.
But that doesn't mean that there isn't other evidence. That doesn't mean that there weren't other projects.
I think it does, Your Honor. I mean, if they were going to doubt everything he says, they have to point to something, the petitioner. They have to point to something that said that these emails, this is the problem, as it said in the NFC case. It begs more questions.
If they had 20 different disclosure documents and he submitted only one, you're saying that proves that's the only one that existed?
I'm saying the record that was before the board and the record that's before you, this is the only device he was working on.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean there aren't 20 others in the closet someplace.
There's no evidence. But that's, again, you're just speculating on things outside the record, and that's the mistake the board made. This is about the inventor's testimony on how he came to invent it.
Again, it's your burden. It's your burden to show that that's the only one. It's not the board's burden or your adversary's burden.
Well, but it's the adversary's burden to establish a record, and they shouldn't be able to just create innuendo and speculation on what might be missing in order to have the board discount particular pieces of corroborating evidence. I mean, all the corroborating evidence that was submitted all supports the testimony of his declaration. And if the board, as it says it was going to do, takes all his evidence as true, all his testimony as true, it's clear that he had a full understanding of his invention, the full conception of his invention, based on the Mechanic 7 drawings prior to the critical date, and that he worked diligently to file the patent applications. That's what the record shows.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Basil. Your case is taken under submission.
Thank you.
Our third case for today is 2017-1719, Endo Pharmaceuticals versus